is that it's a mistranslation over here. Okay? We had that business in the previous Mishnah where they spoke about Boris or Shema, and they said at that time, Rashi said, you know, people come in late to Shul, they've already davened, so if they have enough people to make a minyan, so they do it over again, and so on, so you know, with Baruch Hu and the Baruch Hu Yotzer HaMiyoros, and so on, so that they should feel not left out. Okay. But I mentioned at that time, that's not the only explanation of what Boris HaShema means. Now, that translation of Pores, as I told you, is because the root has various meanings. One of the meaning to, like, to break something, okay? Mm-hmm. But there are other meanings as well. So, here, obviously, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. But it means, Prasen Poshen, for Pores HaShema, means that he goes up there and leads from Baruch Hu One. And he cites, you know, the brachas before the Shema and the Shema Yisrael.
Right.
This is what it means, pros and posh. So, you know, I can't help, you know, how he's translating over there. It's not my translation.
Okay.
I don't understand it that way.
It's
right. Okay. All right. So now, what did we see? We see that as far as a minor is concerned, right? So in that particular case, he is permitted to read the Torah, and he's permitted also to translate the Torah. But he's not allowed to lead the congregation, what? In tefillas, right? He's not allowed to be Boris HaShema. In other words, to recite from Baruch Huan, or can he lead the congregation in Shemin Esra? And if he is a Kohen, Eino Noseis Kapov. In that particular case, then a minor does not recite the Birkas Kohanim. Doesn't do that. Okay? So, this is halfway through the Mishnah. Then we learned that the next part of the Mishnah dealt with the person of Pocheach. And we translated Pocheach as somebody, literally, who has parts of his body revealed. Okay? Could be shirtless, it should be that maybe he has ripped garments or something like that, but at any rate, it means that he is not dressed properly, you know, to daven for the oven. So in that particular case, what is he permitted to do, and what is he not permitted to do? So it says, he is pares a shema, he is permitted to do the introductory part of the chakra service beginning from Boruchu, umetargim, he's also permitted to give a translation of the text from the Torah. Avol Aino Kore Bat Torah, he cannot get an aliyah to read the Torah. Okay? But Yeno of the Atevo, nor is he permitted to say Shemon Esra for the people, right? Yeno Noseis Kapov, nor can he, as a Kohen, bless the people. It's postage, okay?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Right. And then the last part that you heard on the tape, when I played it just before, about a blind man, Suma, Paresa Shema, he can lead the first part of the service, Umetargim, and he can also translate, right? Obviously, what can't he do?
He can't read the Torah.
I mean, this is obvious, right? And does it mention that he could lead the congregation in Shemin Esra? Doesn't say that either, right? Doesn't say that either. Doesn't mention either whether he could what? As a Kohen. Duchen, exactly. Is he permitted to Duchen or not? Okay.
It doesn't say.
Right.
Does that mean permission? Or does that?
Well, that becomes a question halachically afterwards. Obviously, this is, you know, at the moment what the text is telling us, okay? And then we learn that Rabbi Yehuda objected to the fact that the Mishnah says that a blind man can do the first part of the chakras, you know, to say Baruch Hu, Yotzeror, and so on, that he is permitted to do it. And remember, as we said, the first bracha that follows the Baruch Hu is Yotzeror. And Baruch Hashem Yosef Yor is a blessing for the light that we enjoy. So Rabbi Yehuda says, if a person has never in his life seen light, then how is he eligible to recite this bracha?
Well,
this is what he's saying.
There's a condition there. Never in his life. There are
right. Says be above. Right. The people have gone blind. The Rabbi Yehuda would not object to it. You understand?
It's somebody
from birth who's been blind and has never had the experience of seeing what light is like. Okay. So now we're going to analyze this Mishnah, take it phrase by phrase. Okay?
There's a phrase here, I may have missed it. Koresa Shemar, Matarge
means that he is permitted to give the Aramaic translation that he could do. I mean, obviously, if he knows Aramaic and he understands the verses of the Torah, so when somebody is reading from the Torah, as we said, verse by verse, right? So in that particular case, he is permitted to give the translation. Or in the case of the Torah, we said that you could do three verses at a time, but obviously, if he has learned enough, then he would be able to translate that. So that they give permission.
I see something here unusual.
Yes.
There is a Rav by the name of Rav Papa.
Rav Papa, yes.
Yeah. Famous.
Right, okay. We got all kinds of Ravs. Yeah, if you'll take a look at the very end, they probably have the special prayers that we say when we make a Siyum, which Birch Hashem, in about a few months we should be able to do. So, Hocheach is the person who has the heaven over here.
About being exposed.
What do they do to it? They don't have it over here. So, all right, we have it anyway in another sack over here. You'll take a look. It's part of the service when we make a Siyum, right? So then we go through, and we say, come on, Gemara, come on. Well, Kate, they don't have it over here either.
What's that?
I'm looking for, what we say at the end.
Probably only the Rav Papa.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah,
Rav Papa.
Since they asked the question about Rav Papa, right.
Okay.
So, we mention all kinds of names. Here we are. Okay. Very good. You were to, then we say.
Hadron.
No, it's at the beginning.
Hadron.
Okay, right. After the Hadron, right. So, say we look at them. Chanina Bar Papa, right? Rami Bar Papa, Nachman Bar Papa, Achai Bar Papa, Abamori Bar Papa, Raphram Bar Papa, Rachish Bar Papa, Sucha Bar Papa, Oda Bar Papa, Doru Bar Papa. So in other words, how many sons did he have? Kenahari had 10 sons, all of them great scholars. Okay, so therefore we mention. And that's supposed to be, if you can remember all their names, then it's, you have a good memory.
I thought we were finished soon.
Yeah, that's what we say about the same. Right.
Ready for the same.
Right. Good evening, Greg. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a book today.
Oh, you got a book? Oh, yeah. Okay. Tell me that.
First class.
Yeah. Okay. So, the Gemara wants to know, first of all, by Tama, for what reason? Why is the person who reads the Novi, why does he do, why Israel and the Novi's Vanessa? Why? So Rapapa Omar Mishum Kovic says, Rapapa says they want to give him Kovic. So we have to say, Bavos, what kind of Kovic does he need? So the explanation is, okay. In those days, there was a question as to which is the greater kovet, to read from the Torah or to read from the Haftorah. Okay? You understand? Okay. So, they said the feeling was that to read from the Torah was a greater honor. More kovet, more prestigious. Okay? And of course, remember that in those days, everybody who had an aliyah had to read his own verses. Okay? Not that they had a Balkri, as we do today. So they figured, okay, it's a greater covenant. Therefore, what if a person was given the Haftorah to read? That was considered a lesser covenant. So in order to make up to this person, so they give him the cover also of leading and adopting.
Where does Hagba come in?
Hagba, okay. We'll learn later on, you know, about various aliyahs that actually Gdil is considered the greatest because you're wrapping it up.
Yeah.
So it's considered
the greatest. Is that so? Not right. Picking it up.
Yeah.
No. We're wrapping it up.
Well,
but
it doesn't mean anything. They're all honors.
Sure.
In my opinion, every aliyah is an honor, and every thing that you're called up to do is an honor. But as you can see, too many people worried about their covet all the time, right? You want to make sure they have enough covet. Rabbi Bar Shimi Yomar Mishum the Osilin Tsuyek. So Rabbi Bar Shimi says, you know, they're liable to get into arguments. Who? You know, which one? So, for example, Rashi says the following. He says, they'll get into an argument. One guy will say, Ani maftir the atotavol of the ateva. I'll do maftir and you dunk to the yamid. And the other guy will say, what? No. I want maftir and you dunk for the yamid. So they're going to have arguments. So therefore the Mishnah that says, okay, don't argue about it, but if you have the Haftorah, so daven already for the omen as well. Okay. You know, sometimes in shul, it's an argument. Who goes up to daven, you know? You have two yahrzeits the same day, for example.
That they say it was cut for the leader fairly, it was paid for.
Well, that's another question. That's another question. That comes.
And then the mafia
comes. Okay, doesn't matter. All right. Because then the Gemara says, my badayu. So what's the difference between one opinion and the other? All right? So he says, Ike benayu, the ovid bechino. The question would arise if somebody, you know, davens without getting paid for it. Now, of course, we as a normal rule don't pay except to pay a chazan. Okay. All right. But the balabatim, you don't usually pay in order to do it. But apparently in those days, not everybody was
confident.
Yeah, competent to know the David. Maybe they didn't know the Tfilis that well. Remember, they didn't have Siddurim to work with. Instead, something that they remembered. So, as a result, you know, not everybody had that good a memory to know what are the proper prayers to recite. And so maybe they would pay somebody something. So, what if a person wanted to do it, but he's willing not to take any money for it? Okay? So, in that particular case, right?
He does it gratis.
Okay. So, in that particular case, the question is, the Ka'ovid Bechinim, Rashi says, right? So, he doesn't take any money for it. Then, in that particular case, the question is, then why is he doing it? He's doing it for the Ka'ovid. He wants the COVID. Okay.
Right.
So he's willing to fight.
You understand?
For his honor. He's willing to fight in order to be able to give, as we would say in Yiddish, to have the brettel.
The brettel.
I don't know if you know. What is a brettel?
A board.
A board, correct. In many shuls, they used to put in front of the desk a little wooden board upon which the chazan stood. Okay. I don't know if you remember, once upon a time we had this problem, you know, about a discussion about falling down on your knees,
right,
remember, right? And we said, not supposed to be on Evan Matzkis, on a stone floor, okay? So it became customary then to put a board in front for the chazan that he would stand on. I still remember many shuls, I mean, that they have that. Today it's not too customary because everybody carpets shuls these days. In those days, not everybody put carpeting in the shul. So
in our
shul,
we used to put newspaper down.
Yeah, okay.
In Russia, still, there are no carpets pretty much in Asia.
Right.
It's not customary. It's probably stone floors.
Right. Probably stone floors in Russia.
Exactly, right.
Concrete, which is the same problem.
Right,
sure.
All right. Then, of course, Tanan. We learned what the Yiboya caught on. Right, if he was a minor, so we said in the Mishnah, Ovi Rabbi Ovi Da Yodai, that, you know, either his father or his Rebbe stand by him and they do the davening. So he says, "I amet bishum tsuye kotaba tsuyehu." If you say that this business, you know, that we call a cotton for maftir, right, and he doesn't daven for the yomim. So if we say that it's another factor that's involved, namely that people are going to fight up for the honor going up there, right? So we say about the tsuyehu, is a kid going to fight for the honor of davening for the yomim? No, we say. Elamai, shim kovet. So what do we mean then? For, because of kovet, it says cotton bar kovet who? It says, you know, a is. Do you think then that a minor should be given such an honor? Is he going to be fighting for it? But they say, yeah. Not the kid is involved. Elaiko kovet oviv. But maybe the father wants the covet, or the Rebbe wants the covet of having this kid do the maftir, and so the right, and so therefore they're going to argue, you know, that they want to do maftir or something like that. Right.
But I think that
yes, we have another sheet coming up. Okay, we are continuing on the next side of the page, Chav Dalet Amud Beis. And we see they conclude this little section by saying Hachanami. So here too, Ikanatsuy Oviv Ikanatsuy Rabbi. But the father or the Rebbe might get involved in an argument as who has the honor. Okay, God's fine. All right, now we come to the next phrase in the Mishnah, or next problem that was presented over there, namely the person who was Pocheach. Person who was what? He was not dressed properly. Right. Okay. So, boy, mine, Ulo bar Rav, mi Abaye. Okay. So, Ulo, the son of Rav, asked Abaye the following kasha. He said to him, Koton pocheach mahu, sheyikra batorah. What if he is a minor and he's dressed, you know, not in what the latest Gap has to offer, but he's dressed in torn garments or something like that.
Something
so, right. Yeah, okay. Is he permitted to read in the Torah? So, Omalei, so the answer that was given by Abayu says, how come you don't ask me also whether a minor who is naked is permitted to do it? So he says, Orum, my tamolei. Why shouldn't a child who is naked read from the Torah? It's Mishum Kavod Tzibur, right? That they have to respect the congregation, and this would show a complete lack of respect for the congregation. So Achanami, the same thing. You take a person, you know, who is not dressed properly, he also shouldn't daven for the Yomim. Why? Mishum Kavod Tzibur, for the same reason. Well, I don't have to tell you, sometimes, you know, the truth of the matter is that, we would never think in the past of coming to shul without a jacket, without a tie, and things like that. In Eretz Yisrael, a lot of people, not everyone, but, many people in Eretz Yisrael, what do? They don't wear ties, they don't wear jackets. Okay? So, for this reason now, we find that we're also more relaxed in the kind of outfit that we wear in shul.
Sometimes get people here the same way.
Right. But,
I've seen the Israelis come in
right.
The shul. Everybody got a tie, but there are a few of them that don't, like what
right.
You described.
Right. Yeah.
But I think the question would be more like that everybody in the summer coming in wearing shorts.
Yeah, they're right. It's posturish to see somebody standing up for the other.
There's another reason
right.
Why they don't wear a tie.
Right. Yeah.
Because they wear a tie all week long. They don't want to wear the same thing on Shabbat.
That's only if they're a professional. That's if they're a professional. Okay.
Don't wear ties.
That's what
I'm saying.
Right.
Don't
wear
ties. Yeah.
Right.
When
you
say
tachim,
don't you need a little cloth
on your arm?
No.
No.
Some people say tachim by simply doing like this. That's all. Right.
Doctor, I think they are more formal in Israel. Really, we'll go to shul.
Yeah, it depends also what shul you will go to, what community you're in. I mean, it's obvious. Number one, that you have all different types of shuls and notices for real, okay? You have shuls that maybe we would call modern Orthodox. I mean, Chas v'Shalom, no reflection upon their frumkeit, they're all frum. But what I mean is, you know, let's say it's made up of people who are university graduates, professionals, and things like that, and so on. And let's say their philosophy is what we would call, they are datiyim. Datiyim. In other words, they are religious, but they are modern religious. Okay?
They are modern religious.
Okay.
Modern Orthodox.
Right. They are not Haredi. Exactly. The Haredi, that's already either would be Hasidim, or would be, let's say, what we call, you know, Black Hat Yeshiva mentioned. So, right. So they would never go to a shul on Shabbos without wearing a hat, without wearing a jacket, and in most cases without wearing a tie either today. Although that would depend. I mean, Hasidim is here, you know, don't. Right.
So I'd like to comment. Yeah. The shuls that I've seen in Florida heavily attended, the leaders of the shul set the tone.
Yeah.
If you don't come to that synagogue, you've got to have a tie and a jacket. You've got to have, and the women got to be covered. But the shul sets the tone after that.
Yeah.
Oh, we used to do it.
But they can even control it, because here you have a hot climate, you know, very hot. So people come in, say it's very hot. Why are you wearing a tie down here? So the shul will set the tone.
Right. But of course, today too, many shuls, you know, here in this country have air conditioning. In Israel, you don't find air conditioning. It's expensive. No. In the shuls.
Oh yes, it was Arctic.
I went there on Tisha B'Av. The downstairs, it's enormous. It's not air conditioned. Upstairs they have their shul. It's like going into a meat locker.
Going into the ice box. Well, that I haven't heard, but I know that it's possible. I mean, there are certain shuls in New York also, or Monsey or something like that, where the same thing would be true. I don't know if it is or it isn't. All right. Next thing is about the blind man, okay? The Mishnah said that the blind man is permitted to lead the Shema Yisrael, right? And Rabbi Yehuda objected, and he said, if he's never in his life seen what light is, so he's not allowed to recite, you know, the first bracha of the Shema. So, Tanya, we have a Baraisa which tells us, Omunei the Rabbi Yehuda, the sages said to Rabbi Yehuda, Now, the first chapter in the book of Yechezkel, the book of Ezekiel, deals with a vision that he had, a very, very difficult vision, and we call it the Merkava, means literally the chariot, because remember, he saw, you know, like a chariot which is moving back and forth and so on and so forth, and it was driven by four creatures, right? One with the face of a lion, one with the face of an ox, and another with the face of a man, and so on and so forth, okay? And finally, he had a vision of the throne of God. Okay. So, this is a very, I don't have to tell you, it's a very, very difficult passage to understand. And as a matter of fact, the Gemara, in another place, in the Masachas Chagiga, discourages people from even trying to delve into this or into the beginning of how did the world begin and so on, okay? Masi Bereshis and Masi Merkava. Unless they have reached a certain stage of maturity in their life where they can understand things a lot better, you know, and not simply rush to rash judgments, okay? So, what the sages are saying to him right now is that a lot of people have been discussing, delving into the philosophy, you know, trying to understand this chapter. The Loro or some mayhem, and yet never in their life did they see actually this vision themselves, right? So, if that's the case, is it possible that a person who is blind can't imagine that there is something that looks like light? You understand? So, this is what they said to Rabbi Yehuda. So, what did Rabbi Yehuda answer them? He said, Rabbi Yehuda, awesome. So in that particular case, Rabbi Yehuda answered them, Bavanta the Liba Tagimisa, that it's what the heart is trying to understand that this matter is. Okay? The law called Mechavein Yoda. So, and if he, you know, has his heart set upon trying to understand the business of, you know, the Merkava, and in that case, he could learn and he could do so. So they said, yeah, okay, fine. But, and this is Rabbi Yehuda's argument continues. And he says, well, here, however, why do I say that a blind person who has never seen light should not be the leader at this part of the service? It's because he has never had the enjoyment, hanoah, right, of seeing what light looks like. The whole is lehano. After all, we praise God for the privilege of seeing the light, right? We enjoy the light, we use the light, and this person cannot do it, so how could he lead? This is what Yehuda is arguing. Excuse me, I told you my throat was getting a little too, For Rabbanon, and as far as the sages are concerned, is lehano. They say, no, a blind man can still enjoy something, still have use of the light. How so? So they tell a very beautiful story. Rabbi Yossi, as in the case of Rabbi Yossi, the Tanya, as we have learned, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi said, call your my Hoyisi Mitzvah Lamikozer, all my life I was saddened and troubled by this pasuk in the Torah. This happens to be part of the Tochicha, you know, where Moshe, right, they tell the people of Israel, you know, all the bad things are going to happen, right? And one of the verses there says, "Vayisim imashesh batzoharayim kashim imashesh v'vibafila," that, you know, if you don't listen to God, then you will be in such a state as a punishment that you'll be trying to feel your way at noon, when the light should be there, even as a blind man tries to feel his way in the darkness. Why does the Torah say that it makes any difference to the blind man whether he's in darkness or in light, right? In other words, shouldn't be any difference, right? Archibald Masaliyot. And this was how I felt until I actually observed a certain event, a certain deed. Pamachas, once, Hoyisim Halech B'Yishun Laila. I was walking in the dead of night, right, B'Yishun Laila, Ba'Fela, and it was pitch black, okay? The Ra'isi, and then I saw Sumo, a blind man, Shehoyom Halech Baderech, who was walking on the road, and he had a torch in his hand. So I said unto him, Bini, my son, why do you need this torch? After all, you're in darkness, you can't see, so why do you carry a torch? Right, so he said to me, Kol zman she'avuka biyodi, as long as I have a torch in my hand, b'nei adam ro'yimosi, then other people can see me, and they can save me min habchosen, from falling into pits or ditches or whatever it may be, okay, or min hakotzen, or from rubbing against the coats and coats are not the thorns, and the barakon and those are the thistles. Okay, in other words, this way they can spare me, you know, from falling into bushes which are going to hurt me and so on. Or from... So therefore, light is valuable even to a blind man. Right. Right, yeah. Okay, we'll learn about another 15 minutes and call it a night, okay?
No,
yeah, yes.
In no case do they take the light, interpreting light in terms of metaphorically. They're talking literally light and darkness, but light, metaphorically.
Yeah, light is also a metaphor, absolutely.
Understanding.
Right,
and,
right.
Right. Seeing the light.
Of course. I mean, we say every day in our davening, just before Shema Yisrael, we say, V'ho er einenu b'sorosecha, and lighten, give light unto our eyes, in the Torah, and our, in other words, enlighten us that we can understand the Torah. Right, right. So, of course.
A blind man, from that point of view, a blind man could be talking about...
Okay. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that I've heard people who are blind, they daven as chazon.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I remember in the days of my youth, they used to have the blinder chazon. Right, the blinder chazon. He was blind, but he knew the davening by heart, and he could daven.
How did they record everything? Originally, people did not have the print. They didn't have the book. It was all in the mind.
Yeah, but I mean, by listening continually. I mean, why do we have the repetition of the Shmot Esrei? Primarily for the sake of people, that they should learn what the words are, and to enable those who don't know it, you know, how to fulfill the bracha by answering the name. So. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, you have different stages of blindness, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, but those people, right. Those people also that's develop a far better abilities.
Yeah.
Regardless whether it's eyesight or whatever it is, they copy like hearing or whatever, they copy and have a higher level.
Okay. Yeah. Come. Let us continue.
Yeah.
All right. Now we deal with the question of a Kohen. The Mishnah says over here, Kohen sheyesh biyodo mumin. If a Kohen has blemishes on his hands, lo yisores kapov, then he should not raise them to, you know, to bless the people. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, af misho yodo tzivuos, statis, lo yisores kapov. He says, even if the man did not have a blemish in his hand, but his hands were smeared with status. Status is from a Greek word which means like stacte or something or other. I mean, it was used as a dye. It was used as a dye. So let's say he was a dyer, right? And his hands were stained from working with the dye.
So he.
Well, the same would apply, obviously. According to this, the same thing would apply, exactly. Lo yisores kapov, why they should do it? If nei sheom mistakmin bo, because people are looking at him. In other words, they're not happy when they see somebody, you know, who has, you know, hands that don't look right. Right. Yeah. They're not supposed to. What if they took a look? Okay. So tell them. We've learned. Gemara says, Mumin shomu mefonov yodo v'raglov. Right? So we're talking about blemishes, that they're talking about whether it's in his face, his hands, his feet. I mean, don't forget, in those days, and you know, many of the Kohanim would go and they went barefoot when they went to Duchen. Nowadays they usually wear socks when they do so, okay? But in those days they went barefoot. As a matter of fact, the law is that in the Beis HaMikdash the Kohen has to go barefoot, right? His feet have to touch the stone floor over there in the Beis HaMikdash, right?
So it seems to me if you had a logic, you wouldn't sacrifice the blemish.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, correct. I mean, you find that in, you know, the first Vayikra, they have it, right? In Parsha Emor, this is where they speak about it. Yeah, right. You know, with the animal, right, that any blemish will disqualify the animal, and the same thing, your Kohen is disqualified if he has certain blemishes as well.
Yeah, but the
right.
Blemish has to be identified or...
Yes. Yes.
What are we talking about?
Right, right. So here, as I say, you know, they're talking about blemishes, right, either on the hands, feet, or the face, right?
It doesn't define what a blemish is.
Right. So I'm a Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Shimon Zevi, for example, gave the following. He says, Yodov bo hakonios, lo yisor es kapod. If he has hands that look, you know, like they are... Bohak is, you know, a person literally, you know, who
that's really
he's missing part of It looks like leprosy, but it's not leprosy. You understand? He has a rash or something or other. I mean, let's say like a rash or something like that.
Not first of all, again.
Right.
Are these blemishes observed in Orthodox synagogues in the United States?
For the most part, probably his answer is no, but we'll see for a reason why.
Okay. Huh? Do they observe these things in Israel?
The chances are that they do and they don't. I mean, we're more liberal these days than what we have in those days. Because, after all, in those days, the Kohen actually had to work at sacrifices and things like that. Today, the Kohen, he still blesses the people, but apart from that, he doesn't have any other function today. But we honor the Kohen always by giving the first aliyah, by asking him to bench, giving the honor of benching first and things like that, okay? And of course, the Kohen is not supposed to come in contact with the dead unless it's his own immediate family. Okay. All right. So, if he has hands, for example, that are, let's say, like rashes, that look sort of like leprosy, okay? Lo yisos kamo, it's not. Or if they are kumos or akushos, the same thing. If they are twisted or bent or something, lo yisos kamo. Okay. Omer Rav Asi. So Rav Asi said, hey, funny, lo yisos kamo. Person who lives in Haifa should not do so. So the question is, what's chotos over there? So there's a different reason why. The first one we dealt with physical blemishes, right? Okay. So why not? Because Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned likewise, Ein Merud Deateva, Lo Anshei Beit Shan, Velo Anshei Beit Chaifa. We do not permit to go up to the Omid, people who either come from Beit Shan, which is, in the Jordan Valley, below are people who are from Haifa, right? Below Anshei Tivonin, or people come from Tivon. Why? What is their blemish? Why don't we let them become, to go up to Davin for the Omid, or to lift up their hands, and bless the people of the Kadim? Say, but Neshe Korin, the Alfin Ein, well, the Ein in Alfin. In other words, where it should be an Aleph, they pronounce it like an ayin. And where it should be an ayin, they pronounce it like an aleph. That distinction, of course, is lost on us today. Right. But the Taimanim, right, there are still those, who do try to make a distinction between ah and between oh. Something like that. Not Galatiana.
What would happen in Haifa itself, they would have nobody for Davos.
He's talking about old Haifa. He's not talking about modern Haifa. Okay. Modern Haifa, thank God, if you have people going to shul.
Okay.
So we're up to Amram Mitzvah, the shuls will be closed over there. But actually, there are Orthodox people who are also shulgoers and learning in Haifa as well. Not to the same extent that you have in Yerushalayim, but there are. Right. I remember years ago we went to Haifa and tried to find out. They recommended one dairy restaurant, and they said, there was no Te'uda over there. But they said, from people do go in to eat over there because they figure that they're not. Today, I don't think that people would accept the kashrus of such a place. But in those days, I remember the days of my youth, there was a place called Farm Food on 43rd Street in New York. And, where did the young people go in order to eat after being at the theater or whatever, going out on a date? You go down to Farm Food. The Farm Food never had any official mashgiach or anything like that. But because it was a vegetarian restaurant, so they felt that way. What could go wrong in a vegetarian restaurant?
We haven't read
Sam Kavis'
recent article
from
the
Kashrut
Corner.
Right.
What
could
go wrong.
I mean, today we have many things, that we figure might go wrong. But in those days, what did we know?
Was there Kelim concern? The plates, utensils?
Possibly. I mean, they didn't serve any meat. I mean, everything over there was you know, dairy or vegetarian.
Right.
But
whether it was sanctified properly?
That I don't know. I couldn't answer you. But, you know, we had different standards in those days. I must be honest about that.
I remember we had to go far and wide, even though a lot of religious community in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah.
And kosher places.
A lot of them now.
Yeah. Today, yes.
So we come there on a face time.
Yeah.
So I said, trying to find, and then we had difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it narrowed down, even though all of them were given kosher supposedly, but when they were supposed to be specific.
Right. Okay, so obviously this is also considered a mum, in other words a blemish, if you cannot pronounce an aleph or an ayin correctly. Okay? Omale Rabbi Chila Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Chila said to Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi, and he said to him, Lemole atol Levi, posul atol ben aduchan. He says, you know, and if you were a Levi, you would not be eligible to go up on the Duchen. Over here, the Duchen was the platform in the Beis HaMikdosh from which the Levium would sing the Psalms. Why? He says, you would not be eligible to do it, Nishom de Ove Kalach, because your voice is too thick. So, in other words, it would not sound right in the chorus of the Levium, you know, when they do it. So, you would not be eligible either. In other words, talking about a mum, not only for Kahanim, but it also applies to Levim, and it also applies to whom? To anybody who goes up to Davin for the oven if he can't pronounce his Ivrit correctly. Okay? That's what they say.
Yeah, but you have that where you have to cover the words of the world.
Yes.
And that clearly applies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the way they dominate.
Who's standing? Right. You know, where do you...
But well, we accept it. They got to go. If you get somebody from Morocco, you
know.
Okay, so anyway, this is what he said to Shimon, the son of Rebbe. And of course, Rebbe's Rebbe Gunadossi. So, also, Amalei Labur. So, Shimon came and he told his father about it. So, Amalei. So, his father said to him, Zil, Amalei, tell him, Kishatom Agi Itzel, the Chikisi Ladashem, right? That and I waited for the Lord. Lord Nim says, "Bechorif Megadiv." You should not, say bad things about the Rebbeinu Shneilam. Why not? Because in the final analysis, what we're saying is, you are also. He says that you answer him as follows. This is how I'm working now with Rashi. Rashi says, Lamnit says, Bechor of Gadev says, you should not, speak bad the name of God. Why? Because Shehoyo Kuri the Chesin Hayin, right? So he would pronounce his Ches like an H, like a H, not a Ch, right? So in that case, instead of the Kisi Lad Hashem, where Yeshaya says, and I waited for the Lord, right? It would be Vehikisi Lashem. In other words, I hit the Lord. I smote the Lord. That's what it comes out like. In other words, the mispronunciation is such. So you tell him that he's no great angel either when it comes to it. He also mispronounces. Okay. Omer Rav Huna. Rav Huna said, Zavlegon lo yisa es kapod. It says a Zavlegon should not go in Duchen. So the question is, what is a Zavlegon? So Rashi explains, Zavlegon means somebody whose eyes are continually tearing. So he should not go up to Duchen. Why? So, the Ha'ahuda Havad B'Shiva Busei the Rav Huna. So now they say, yeah, but there was a certain guy who lived in the neighborhood of Rav Huna. And he would, raise his hands to bless you. In other words, he was a kohen. He would go up to Duchen, even though what? Even though it's understood, right, that he had a blemish. So he says, well, how who dosh be yirahav? Well, the reason is because people in the city were used to him, and so they didn't consider it a mum. So this is the basic idea. In other words, the people say, you know, this is not a disqualification in that case. If they're happy to have him go, then, so it's okay. So we can go up and duchen for them. Okay. Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. I mean, the emphasis here is not upon disease, but anything, you know, which would cause a person to be disfigured so that the people would not respect him. That's the basic idea. That's why he should, you know, be free of any blemish so that people would respect him and appreciate the prophet that he's given.
If a person has artificial limbs or something like that,
Davin for the Yom, the answer is yes. To be a Kohen, I would say probably not. Yeah. But again, if the people of the community are willing to accept him, as it says over here, Tanya Nami Hachim, we've learned likewise, Zavlegon Yisus Kapov, another statement, you know, that reinforces it, that this person whose eyes are teary should not raise his hands, you know, and pronounce the Birkas Kahanim, the Imha Yodosh Biro. However, if this is, you know, the people in the town were purposely, you know, they were used to it and they're willing to accept it, then Mutar is permitted. Omer Rabbi Yochanan said, Sumo Biyachas Biyeno of the Yisro's Kapar. Yochanan says that a person is blind in one eye, he should not duch. So they say, Rabbi Yochanan. Well, there was a certain man who lived in the neighborhood of Rabbi Yochanan, the Havi Paris Yodei, right? And nevertheless, obviously, he was blind in one eye and still he went up to Dochen. So again, the same explanation. Right? He was someone, you know, who everybody in the city was familiar with, and they were willing to accept it. Tanya Nami Hachi. So we have learned likewise another teaching which says, Suma biachas bi'einov, if he is blind in one of his eyes, lo yisos kapov, he should not duchen, but in mayodosh b'dom mi'irei mutar. However, people were, you know, they were willing to accept it, and in that case, it's permissible. And then finally, statement over here, Rabbi Yehuda Imer, Rabbi Yehuda who said, Nishahoyi yodot tzivuos lo yisos kapov, right, and that his hands was stained with dye, he should not, you know, duchen. So Tano, so again, we have another teaching that we learned, Imreg on Sheho'ir, Malachtam Bechach, if most of the people in the city happen to be dyers, right, and their hands are all going to be stained, so in that case, Mutar. It's permitted. Right.
You know what angle they haven't discussed? Suppose the Kohen has a cold.
If he has a cold,
In
that case, the nose running would be like the eyes running. It would be like the eyes tearing. Right.
You got enough problems with the eyes.
Yeah, that's
all
the thing.
You can find
all kinds of
reasons. Right. All right. We'll go down to the bottom of the page. We don't have too many more lines to go. Okay? Another mission. If a person says, I'm not going to go up to daven for the yomid because I'm wearing dyed clothing. Okay? So, then in that case, he was not permitted to go up to daven even if he's wearing white clothes. Okay? If he says, why? Because he's been awfully stubborn. And he wants COVID. So they say, if you want COVID, then don't go up to daven. This is what it actually...
It falls. Aren't you supposed to be humble and not and supposed to be asked twice?
Of course. All right. That's a Gemara in the Brochus about that. Yeah. Okay. And then, same story, Besando. Person says, Besando any over, I'm not going to go up to Duchen wearing sandals. Presumably shoes, yes, but sandals, no, right? So Af Yochiv lo yavo, then he's not to go up there even if he was barefoot. Okay. So in other words, here it's a matter of pride by the looks of it. Now we come to a different story. Ha'oset filose agulo sakon v'embob mitzvot. In those days, there was a question, apparently, about what the tefillin should look like. So if a person wears tefillin where the box is round rather than being, you know, square the way we have it, sakona, there's danger, they say. The Yimbo mitzvah, there's no mitzvah to wear tefillin like that, okay? Or, nisono al mitzvah, what if he put it over here? On his brow, instead of putting it over here where it belongs, okay? Or al pas yado, let's say he puts it on his hand, the tefillin. You know, the shel yad, he puts it on his hand, instead of putting it, you know, over here. On, right. So in that case, harezu derech aminus, they say. This is a form of heresy, and therefore you should not be allowed to do it. Now what if he has tefillin? Tzipon zahav. And let's say he put a gold covering on them, gold veneer or whatever you want to call it, okay? And the son of Al-Bais Unkele, you should know, and he put it on the on his sleeve. He wore a sleeve, and then he put it on the sleeve. Didn't put it on the flesh, but actually on the sleeve itself, right? This again is a matter of heresy, so to speak. So obviously not allowed to daven from the oven if they're dressed that way. So they say, "My tamachashin and shem aminus nisukaboy." And what is the reason, you know, that we're afraid of all these things? Because we say maybe he's has a touch of heresy in him. And then where it says, that if a person has a round box instead of a square box, so there's no mitzvah in it, and it may be a dangerous situation. If we to say, are we talking about what the teaching of the rabbis have said? The fact that tefillin have to be squared. This already goes back orally to where? To Moshe Mount Sinai. So, halacha l'Moshe Sinai. Right. So, not only that, but the Omar Rava, Rava added, he said, the Teflon of Alaksonim, the fact also that, you know, that the way they're stitched together and the way the boxes fits and so on has to be, you know, according to the tradition that we have. So, in other words, if you wear tefillin that don't look that way, then what? In that case, you can be suspected of what?
Heresy.
Of heresy. Omer Rav Papa Masnisin Davido Ki Amguza. So Rav Papa says, you know, another thing. Let's say the guy puts on tefillin which are round like an egg, like a nut, but if tefillin are big enough that they're round as it's an egg, in other words, not 100% round, but, you know, in other words, that they were elongated, or if they are like a bean, then shapit, I mean, then in that case, it would get by, right? The lot is tayeh, and but this is not, you know, it's not a support, says Rashi, for what we learned in the Mishnah. Obviously, when it comes to tefillin, it's what the sages said in the second life in the bottom, namely, that tefillin, that the fact that they have to be square, is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It has to be this way, and it has been this way for generations, and any deviation is not real tefillin, period. Okay, we shall stop
time
over here.
When people yeah. Around with their shape of tefillin?
Possibly, possibly. But if so, then in that case, they say no.